This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast. Back at it. After a week off, Pat Gast returns from Rogers Arena, where the Canucks demolished the Los Angeles Kings last night. Jeff Patterson of TSN 1040. Jason Botcher of The Province here to break it all down. And, of course, the Pat Gast is always a presentation of the fine folks out at Eagle Ridge GM in Coquitlam. They're proud sponsors of the BCHL Coquitlam Express, and they're your number one overall pick for selection and inventory. Check them out. The showroom, you can find them at 2595 Barnett Highway, or you can start your search for a new vehicle online at eagleridgegm.com. I'm here. You're here. We're both in Vancouver. The last time we sat down and did this, we sort of had to decompress. We had a lot to get off our chests. It was done in a hotel room in Columbus a couple of weeks ago after the ordeal that was our trip from Montreal to Washington. And we thought the travel troubles were behind us at that point, but oh, how wrong we were.
Yeah, honestly, like I know people, they probably get, you know, they don't want to hear us complain all the time, right? But that was... In my 12 years on the beat, that was the worst trip that I had ever, like multiple cities with multiple flights canceled. And I didn't think we're getting out of Columbus. Like, I didn't think that was going to happen.
We ended up in Atlanta. Like, it's a couple of weeks removed and I'm still shaking. Like, you and I spent some time in Atlanta on that last road trip, and I got a kick out of it because the Eagles were playing the Falcons. We got rerouted. It should have been an hour and a half flight from Columbus to Minnesota. Straightforward, easy. It was going to be an easy day. It was going to be a practice day in Minnesota at the end of the trip, and you know, just put your feet up, an hour and a half plane ride to Minnesota, and one game to go. But no. The snow as we are in Columbus, the city, the coverage of the snowstorm in Columbus was so good. Like, you know, we're inside the building. We can't see what's going on. And the city's just shutting down around us.
No, I was sending you, like, I was walking around at like 3 o'clock or 2 o'clock. And I was sending you like pics of all of these businesses that had posted signs, like they had written in black marker and then pasted these signs on their windows that everything would be closing. The entire city was closing at 5 o'clock due to this snowstorm. Like nothing. Starbucks was closing, Chipotle, like every restaurant in the neighborhood, businesses were shutting down. People were fleeing from skyscrapers to get out of the city. And I was like, holy fuck, like we're screwed again. Like this, for sure this city is shutting down. And sure enough, we found out that night that once again, our flights, were canceled and making matters worse for me, I was in a bit of a panic, because yeah, the Eagles were playing a big playoff game. I don't want to miss that. I don't want to miss any of these playoff games. And it just worked out that it was a day where I didn't have to worry about a Canucks game. So it was working out great. Showed up the first thing in the morning, 8 a.m. to get on a flight. And it took me all day, hours on the phone trying to get out of there. And then, yeah, I end up going to Atlanta with you. And I'm thinking, like, I'll watch a quarter of the game. And I brought you to some bar in the airport and I made you watch the quarter with me with all of these Atlanta Falcon fans, which wasn't great because the Eagles looked terrible and Foles looked awful in that first quarter. And then I was getting on that plane and I had a great anxiety about missing this game. And I thought I would for sure was going to miss it. And I found out when I was sitting there that, my day turned a notch up or two because I found out that they had live TV. So I'd be able, and that moment, I'm telling you right now, the joy I felt, like after every, and it was because I was so beaten down, right? Like so fucking beaten down for like 8, 9, 10 days on this goddamn awful trip. The joy I felt knowing at that moment I would be able to watch this game. It was, I have to say, like, it was better than when my kids were born. Because when my kids are born, like, I'm worried about them, right? I'm like, is this guy going to be healthy? Is he going to be okay? Am I going to be a good dad? Like, I have all these concerns. When I found out I'd be able to watch the Eagles playoff game, it was just pure joy. And I actually, in that moment, could feel good. Because if that didn't happen, I would have been so fucking pissed off at you. Because somehow, I don't know. They know who you are. They upgraded you to this, like, one of the great business classes I've seen recently on an airplane. Like, you had your own section. You had your own wing of the plane. Where I was like, let me go talk to J-Pi. I just want to go say hi. They wouldn't even let me through. They had, like, guards on this door. They wouldn't let me through. And I just, like, could peek in there. And I saw you, like, at the front, like, just kicking back in this big chair. And I was like, fuck, how did this guy get that treatment, man? Like, it was almost – everything we went through was almost worth it for me to feel the joy of being able to watch that Eagles game and to see you sitting back and relaxed like a baller in fucking first-class business class. It was unreal, man. I don't know how it happened.
Neither do I, and I wasn't going to ask any questions. But I have to say, like, when you board the plane mid-cabin, and I'm just, in my entire life, I've always done the right turn and head for the back. And, like, it was difficult. Like, my brain didn't want to go left, but, like, I saw these plush seats, and I had 1D on my ticket, and one of them was for me. And, oh, it was so good. But I was so happy that at least you got your live TV, because one of my favorite moments on this trip, and it did feel like the trip was never going to end, was watching. We had to seek out the football game in the Atlanta airport. And, you know, it's an airport, so it's a transient crowd. There were a lot of Atlanta fans, but there's people from all over the place coming and going. Atlanta's a busy airport. But to watch you, this hardcore Eagles fan, being served at the bar by staff in Falcons jerseys, and I thought you were just going to snap, because the bartender, if you remember, like, He wanted your order so badly. Like, you know, you're taking up a seat at his bar, and, like, he was just working you, like, every minute. Are you ready? Now? Let's go! And eventually, you know, we little stopover in Atlanta. And it's, look, people know geography. Columbus, Atlanta, Minnesota is not direct. Like, no. It's, again, that's why I say I still can't believe, and I get that Atlanta's a big Delta hub, whatever, instead of being an hour and a half flight and an easy day,
yeah,
it was a long day. And if anybody listened to the last podcast, you know that a huge part of my story on the early portion of the trip was my luggage went missing more than yours do. We both lost our luggage. You got yours back in Washington.
Yeah.
I eventually got mine back in Columbus, and then this flight from Columbus to Minnesota, there was a 1 o'clock direct flight, but everybody else had been bumped and put on, and we couldn't get on that flight.
Yeah.
But my luggage did. And so, like, after, like, you know, I've had all these people like, never, don't ever let go of your luggage. Don't ever lose sight of your luggage again, man. Like, hold on to it. And right there, my luggage went ahead of me again. But it was a sight when I finally, you know, I had to get out of the first class seat when we landed. I didn't want to. Just wanted to stay curled up on the plane. Can I just, you know, a few more minutes, please? Anyways, the luggage was there in Minnesota, and all was good. And we saw the Canucks win in Columbus. We saw them win in Minnesota. We hadn't seen many wins to that point out of the road trip, but starting to get some healthy bodies back. And so we'll get around to hockey in a sec, because I don't know where it came from last night, but this offensive explosion against the Los Angeles Kings, and the Rookie of the Year race is back on again. So much good stuff around the Vancouver Canucks right now. But I didn't get to include this on the last podcast we did, and it's been bugging me, and I can't remember how it came. Oh, I know how it came up. There was a story on the province website about this diehard Eagles fan that, you know, the pilgrimage right. He made through the snow. And, like, it sort of paralleled what we had gone through, but I don't think he lost his luggage anywhere. No. And he didn't have flight, like, cancellations. He just rented a car. It was snowy. We went through that, and we contemplated renting a car. But nowhere in there did it mention anything about a $33 Caesar salad. Right. And I'm still, like, that was Montreal. How many weeks ago was it? Like, that's two weeks now.
2 weeks ago.
So we outlined last that we both had some travel trouble even getting from Toronto to Montreal on a game day. You know, played Saturday night. I was up early. I took the train out to Toronto Airport. You had the luxury of the island airport that you didn't tell me about. All that kind of stuff. So I get to Montreal. I check in. There's Sunday afternoon football on. I for the first time all season, we're past the midway mark of the season. I didn't feel like going down to the restaurant. I just, like, damn it, there's room service. I'm going to order. And I thought, I'll have a Caesar salad. So I look at the menu in the hotel in Montreal, and Caesar salad, $14. Ah, great. I was like, I'm going to throw some chicken on there. And I didn't see the price for chicken, but I, you know, it's chicken. What, $6, $8, whatever. Like, no big deal. Like, just throw some chicken on the damn salad and bring it to me. And so, sure enough, they do. After I place the order, 15 minutes later, my salad arrives. Guy shows up with a dome over my salad. I didn't get the rolling cart, but he had it on a tray. Can I come in, put it down? All that kind of stuff. And he's great. I mean, here's my salad. I'm ready to go. I got football on TV. And the guy says, that'll be $33. I look him in the eye. I say, what? $33? I say, what would it be 30? It was like 14 on the menu. And he's like, he shows me the bill. And it was 14 for the salad, 8 for the chicken. There was a delivery fee. There were taxes. And then the tip was already put on there. Like, I didn't even get the tip option. And I would have tipped the guy a couple of bucks. You add it all up. My fucking Caesar salad in Montreal cost me $33. I've got a per diem. I got just more than half my per diem busted on a fucking Caesar salad.
What did it look like? Like, did it look amazing at least? Was it huge? Was there tons of chicken? Amazing croutons, like homemade chef-created croutons?
No, the food in first class was way better. The Delta meal was way better, like, way better than my $33. Like, that thing's going to stay with me forever. It was okay, but it wasn't a $33 Caesar salad.
Dude, you can never order room service. Like, that is the first, now you know, right? Like, now you know for sure. Like, you can't ever, that's one of the first rules of going on the road. Like, it's literally set up to rob you. Like, that is it's a whole thing that they are just going to take advantage because you want to be comfortable in your little room and you're too dainty or fragile to go outside and go to a real restaurant or even order something in, and they are going to rip you off, dude. And $33 Caesar salad is a rip off.
I'm going to be paying in installments for like months still. Sorry, family, no vacation this year. I got to pay off that damn Caesar salad. Speaking of vacations, there was no podcast last week because I was in Mexico. And so from Minnesota,
the Canucks
get this big break. And, you know, I had this all planned. My family had gone down. I was going to meet the wife and kids down in Mexico. So the Canucks played Sunday night in Minnesota. I get up first thing Monday. I get on a plane. I fly from to Puerto Vallarta. Great. I'm thinking I'm leaving hockey behind. I step off my flight, and not a word of a lie, 2 minutes in the Puerto Vallarta airport, and there's this massive lineup at customs, and I'm standing there, and I'm just looking around, and because they're all so tall, like, there's Good Branson. There's Edler. There's Markstrom. I'm like, seriously? Like, I thought and I'm sure they were thinking the same thing. Like, really? The last guy in the world we want to see is this guy. We come, you know, international borders. We thought we'd left this kind of crap behind. But apparently Gagne and Erickson were with them, which is such a bizarre group. Like, if I'm picking five Canucks to go on holiday together, like, it's just such a weird, strange group. Some have a bunch of kids. Some have none. Some are married. Some aren't. Anyways, so I see these three big guys at the back of the line. I didn't see Erickson and Gagne, but
like a typical Canucks game.
Not bad.
I didn't see Gagne or Erickson.
Anyways, we just exchanged a few brief pleasantries.
Oh, you did? Yeah, you said hey?
Yeah, I wasn't going to get in their face. Like, they're on vacation. They're free to do their thing.
Right.
And I wanted to get on my way anyways. I thought that was kind of funny of all the places, sure enough. And then I saw on, like, social media that wives and girlfriends were there and they were having a grand old time. But it does beg the question, like, what was Good Branson doing on this Mexican fiesta that we haven't seen the guy since?
Yeah, I don't want to, you know, pick apart what guys do. It's their time off. They should be allowed to do whatever they want. If a dude wants to go to Vegas, he can go to Vegas. Dude wants to go to Mexico, he can go to Mexico. I did hear, though, patio loungers can be tough on backs, though, apparently. I've heard that.
Yeah.
If you get the wrong one. If you're not early, because you got to be out. Like, did you have this thing at the resort where you got to be out, like, first thing in the morning to get a lounge chair and you got to throw your towel on it?
Oh, my wife takes that on as a personal challenge. Yeah, like, she gets just so pissed if, like, she's got her spot. She identifies her spot early in the week. And then if anybody comes close, like, she gets so pissed. And so she's up early, like, doesn't set an alarm, but, like, I'm always amazed how quickly she's out of the room to go down to the pool to throw towels, to say, like, it's just at sea. Like, I don't care where around the pool. They bring you drinks wherever you are. Like, I don't like the sunlight, direct sunlight. So I like the warm temperature, but I don't need to be basking in the sunshine. So I don't care where I am. But man, my wife, like, that is a personal challenge of hers to get her spot by the pool.
Yeah, I was surprised. Like, the Gudbranson injury, I mean, it's bad timing. Certainly kind of felt like it came out of nowhere. I think for the team, it kind of came out of nowhere. There was some confusion. Is he on IR? Is he not on IR? I think you asked Green about that. He was officially on, he was, and the paperwork had him on IR one day, and then yesterday he wasn't. So we'll see here. I think we'll still be podcasting when the players come out. We'll see if he's on the ice today. But it's a, you know, he's an important figure here for the Canucks for the next month because he's one of their main trade chips, and they all obviously have big, they must have big plans because they're pressing the Sedins, like, in one of the, I think when one of the real kind of PR missteps of this team that I've seen in a while, the Benning coming out, and I like Jim, and I like his folksy presentation, and I like how honest he is, and I think that that connects with a lot of media and a lot of fans, and a lot of times it really works. There are times where it backfires. I think the PK Subban, and you know, I saw that Friedman had confirmed that the Canucks were going to trade their fifth overall pick if Dubois was there for Subban. Talking about that didn't help him, wasn't a good look. And coming out this week, after the Sedin stuff broke, and J.P. Barrie kind of started it with Dhaliwal, so the Sedin stuff breaks, that the Sedins, the Canucks want to know if they're coming back. Okay, fine. But for Jim to come in out and say that that is now tied intrinsically with what the Canucks are going to do at the deadline, it's not fair to the Twins. It's not, it's honestly, it's just not, it's just a mistake to have them, something like that to happen to them. I don't agree with it.
No, I totally agree. I think it put Henrik in a tough spot yesterday, and it's not going to be the last time. I joked yesterday on 1040, though, that I could just see Henrik, once he got through with us and, you know, 10 minutes of standing there answering questions about his future, going into the back room and telling Daniel, like, it's your turn tomorrow, man. Like, I'm the captain. I'll take the first bullet, but, yeah, I mean, I am kind of curious how it plays out. And we saw a little bit of this last year where this team tried the same strategy to protect guys like Burrows and Hansen, you know, with the no-trade clauses. And remember, Jim Benning came out and tried to get in front of the story, and it lasts for about 6 weeks. But again, I mean, ultimately, you get closer to a trade deadline, these questions are going to get asked. And so, you know,
this was an easy fix. This was an easy – news got out. Fair enough. Like, I think, you know, it was on Hockey Night in Canada. All Jim had to say is, look, we want to know sooner than later. It's going to help us. It's going to help us. That's all. We just want to know. We want to know as soon as we can where they're leaning. He didn't have to take it a step further to say what we do at the deadline is tied to these guys, which makes no sense. Like, I've heard people try to rationalize this and say, yeah, you know, that I could see how this could be dependent on what they get for Gudbranson. No. A team is going to say, Jim, we've got a 22-year-old creative playmaker here. Do you want him? You know what? We're going to pass. The Sedins are coming back for one more year. Like, they need futures. They need to be planning right now 2 and 3 years ahead. That should be the goal of being a good team in 2 to 3 years from now and getting pieces for Gudbranson and getting pieces for Vanek that's going to help them do that. And maybe it's draft picks. Draft picks can help. Second round picks can help. They got Lynn, they got Gajewicz in the second round in 2017. In 2 or 3 years, those guys could be a part of the lineup. That's how it works. So you don't have to be bent on, we got to get a player, we got to get a 22-year-old, we got to get a veteran. Like, just get the best deal you can. And if that comes in the way of a second round pick, man, great. I think that everyone in town would be happy about that.
I think we're all on board now that they're coming back. I don't think there's much doubt that the Twins...
Oh, dude, that's the kicker to all of this. This whole thing is created over an issue where all of us expected them to come back. In fact, if you read between the lines, when they did... Were you there interviewing them the day after, the day that the Players Tribune story came out? Like, everything they said then was basically, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, guys, we're coming back. This isn't going to be it. Like, they tried to tell everyone in multiple different ways. Like, this didn't need to be a huge deal. We all expect them to come back. I think the Canucks expected to come back, but obviously they second guessed themselves, and then it's turned into this public firestorm that I'm telling you is not going to go away for the next month.
And they have been productive. Like, I have no issues with the production that you're seeing out of Daniel and Henrik, but I do think it has to be pointed out. Like, people can't just look at the stats and think, hey, 50 points, this is great. Again, look at the way the points are being created. They are being given, they're being sheltered. We've seen that. It's been that way all season long. And watch, I watched Winnipeg the other night in Winnipeg. It's the third time I've seen the Jets, and they're not alone by any stretch, but like, the Jets are so fast and so skilled. Like, they're a legitimate Stanley Cup contender. Like, I've seen them three times. Each time I see them, I think I've thought more of them. And again, just the discrepancy in speed between those two teams, and that's where this game is going. And so, you know, in their heyday, the Twins' best defense was they always had the puck in the offensive zone. That's not the case anymore. They shelter them. They give them every opportunity to start in the offensive end, but we see it on a nightly basis. There are still, you know, there's so many issues with their defensive play, and, you know, a year from now, it's not going to get any better. And so I do worry. Like, there's two ends of the ice, and you just can't look at them and say, hey, they're 50-point guys. They are. But, you know, again, this team has to get, it's got to get faster, it's got to get more skilled, and this idea that, you know, you're going to have a team next year that has the Twins, and then there are some that think, oh, you got to resign Vanek. I'm so on board with you've got him. You can't come back with this same group that is floundering at the bottom of the standings, right. And yet these veteran guys, I mean, Erickson, yeah, there were some signs of life last night, but look, we know the Louis Erickson story. You know, next year is going to look a lot like this year, and so will the year beyond that. Like, so, yeah, I guess I'm prepared to have the Twins back for another year, and then the question becomes price point. And I hear a lot of people looking at Joe Thornton and $8 million in San Jose. Right. You know, for years, you've heard it, I've heard it too. People are like, okay, when the Twins are going, you know, when the Twins contract is up, $14 million comes off the books, as if they're going to have all this money to go out into the open market and play with. They're not getting $8 million. Like, Thornton, I think what happened there was, and I can't remember the full order of it, but, like, Marleau left. The Sharks couldn't allow both Marleau and Thornton to walk out the door. So
they're not getting eight, but they're not playing for three. They're not playing for Sammy Gagne money. Come on. They're not playing for $3 million.
I agree with that, but I do think that they have, like, it's not about money. You heard Henrik say that yesterday. Like, at some point, if they want this team to get better, look, they just, they've got more money than they know what to do with, and they've used some of it to, you know, donate to the children's hospital. Like, they've been great with their money. I'm not knocking that for a sec, but it's not about money. They've got all the money in the world. I do think that it would probably be in their best interest to leave a little bit on the table so the team could go and spend in some different ways. Like, if they come back at $6 million apiece, then really what's been gained?
Yeah, no, that's, you're right. It's, I've seen people get to the number of five. That seems to me to be in that, when Henrik was talking to us and saying, well, you know, we want it to be a fair one where some people may think it's a little bit too much and some people may think it's not enough. I think five, to me, you could argue one way or the other. And if they come back for four, it's great. But dude, they're not coming back for three. It's just not in the cards. Like, that's just not, it's just not happening. Like, there's just no way that they're going to come back for Gagne money.
Right, and J.P. Barrie's never going to let that happen. And you're, I mean, there is a market value. You're right. Although, I mean, in a perfect world, you know, you'd see the number. Again, we talk about hometown discounts. But if they could get them 4.5 to 5, I mean, that's $10 million. It does free up $4 million from what they're getting this year, and that's money that they could go into the market. And
let me walk you down the 4.5. So let's say it's 4.5 each. Do they get new movement clauses? And if they don't... If they don't get the no movement clauses, what are the chances that the Canucks would look to trade them? Because at $14 million, no one's going to trade for them. But if it's $9 million combined, and you can add those two guys at the deadline, make them your third line offensive push guys in a playoff run, you know, they might have some value in a situation like that.
Well, we'll have to wait till next year's Players Tribune article to find out how they feel heading into another. Like, it is. And you're right, like, all that stuff has to be considered, but it is crazy to think that these guys that poured their hearts out in the Players Tribune about how much they love the city, you know, a year from now would consider a move when they wouldn't. But there are some economics at play. There's no question about it.
you know, maybe taken out of their hands, right? Like, it could be, I mean, if they don't get the no movement clause, like, the owner, Aquilini's could say, like, look, like, this is, we got to trade them. We need assets. We need stuff. And the Canucks, I think, always have to be thinking that way. Like, how do we get ahead? How do we further ourselves by collecting assets? And my understanding was that Vanek was that type of move when they signed him. That if they were in the race, they would keep him. This was the plan when they got him in September. It was a late sign. And if they were out of the race, they would trade him. Now all of a sudden, things are their second. Like, he's having, his season is exactly the same season he had last year. I don't understand why everyone's like, this is the Vanek breakout year. He actually had more points in the same number of games last year with the Red Wings. This is Thomas Vanek. Like, this is the guy. Now you're out of the race. Stick with the plan. Don't get diverted. Don't think you got, he's 34 years old. This is not part of the future. You have to try to use him to get a piece for the future. That's why the signing made sense. Execute now. Don't get diverted with, oh man, what the Sedin's going to do? How are we going to make up for these points? Don't worry about it. Think what the team is going to look like in 2 or 3 years from now and how you can better that situation.
We sit here and we watch this group right now. And, you know, it was good to see Besser get back into the goal-scoring flow last night. And, you know, I mean, he's just too good a player and too good a goal scorer for that to go on a whole lot longer than it did. But, you know, great to see him score not once but twice. And great response from him, obviously, when he gets run into the end boards, that he's the guy that's kind of putting the exclamation mark on, you know, the Trevor Lewis situation. I thought it was funny, his response. I asked him, I mean, is that, you know, was that the best response possible when you get pushed headfirst into the boards? And
yeah, I don't know. He gave you one of those, man. I thought that was pretty revealing, actually, when, because you know, that's the only response Brock Besser can have, right? I'm gonna lay in that. That's, you know, right up there with his hardest shots of the season. He saw that whole play develop. That goal was entirely 100% created by Brock Besser. He knew where he wanted to go on the ice. He went there and took the pass from the Eddie the Eagle, and it was one of those ones. You can tell when he wants to go savage. He leans his body into it, and he put everything he had into it, and he scored, and it was great. But he didn't like the hit. He was mad about it. He was angry about it. And I think when you asked him that, I thought other guys in the room said, like, there should have been more of a response. I was actually blown away. I still don't get where Green was coming from, where he pretended not to know that it was Lewis that did the hit. And then he said, well, Lewis didn't think it was a penalty. Like, what? Are you, like, who cares what Trevor Lewis thought, dude? What did you think? What did your team think? How did your team react? How did they respond? And it's not all about this time. I get it. Brock Besser wasn't hurt great. He was crumpled on the ice. And when Edler approached Lewis, Edler had no idea whether he was, you know, was concussed, a broken face. And that kind of shoulder shrug, I think Edler's playing great. I think he's, like, this is among the best 2 or 3 week runs he's had in recent memory. But man, come on. Like, he can't do anything. He can't come up and cross-check him in the hip. He can't do something. We're just going to throw up our hands and say, well, it's Edler. He can't do anything.
Right. And, like, there are some situations where, you know, you score and it's a or they hadn't scored on the power play yet, but, you know, where it's a tight game, a one-goal game or a tie game. Where you have
13 points out of the playoffs, though.
I get that. And they had a massive lead for the first time in a long time. Like, right. You know, take a penalty at that point. You know, I agree. Spend some currency. And I thought it was interesting, too, that, you know, this comes on a night when, at the morning skate, Travis Green had talked about how, you know, some guys have to step outside of their comfort zone. Like, those were the words he himself, as the coach said, like, that was a perfect opportunity, I thought. And look, the days of Frontier Justice are long gone. I wasn't expecting somebody to go Marty McSorley or Todd Bertuzzi. But you're right. It wasn't just trying to send a message to the LA Kings. It's trying to send a message to the other 30 teams in the NHL that this guy's going to be scoring goals for the Canucks for a lot of years, and you might want to think twice if you're going to run him from behind.
Sure, because, you know, and I wrote about this last night, like, what happens next time when he's 3 feet closer to the boards, where it's a harder hit from behind, where, you know, his face takes up more of the blunt trauma. What happens then? What happens when he really is hurt? Someone at some point is going to need to step up in these situations. And I totally get that they're not built that way. And I honestly think that deep down, Travis Green sees that his team is too soft. Like that frustrates him and that bothers him. And this is not, you know, the team that Travis Green necessarily would build if he could have picked all the pieces. He wants to be, he always talks about it, be hard to play against. And they're not. They're just not a hard team to play against. And I do think he would like a different dynamic. He would like, you know, potentially some different players who could, you know, do more of that type. And it's funny when you go back to when Benning was hired, all the buzz was the Boston model and the Aquilinis want to follow and they want to have this big, tough team. And you look at a lot of the initial acquisitions, getting Vertanen. True. He needed Dorsett. How to get Dorsett? Got the extra pick in Anaheim to get Dorsett. Even adding Spezza. I think that was the Trampkin draft too. Like he drafted a lot of big guys, in that draft. Like it seemed to be like that was the path they were on. And then here we are, you know, heading up to 4 years for those guys. They've had four off seasons and they're as soft as a team. Canucks team, as I think that I've seen since I've been around.
Meat and potatoes, right? Remember, we heard an awful lot about meat and potatoes. And
there's really neither. There's, you know, they don't have...
There's some potatoes. mashed potatoes, though.
Yeah, there's definitely some potatoes.
Batcast is always a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam. The new Drive Into the New Year event is still going on. It's the Drive Into the New Year bonus event at Eagle Ridge GM. Up to $14,000 in discounts. Get huge savings on the largest selections of Silverados and Sierras in stock. Go to EagleRidgeGM.com for full details. So, we all sat and watched in amazement as the Canucks pounced all over the Los Angeles Kings up 3-0 before the game was 6 minutes old. Do you think that it's possible that they can recapture what they had in those first 15 to 20 games now that they've got all these healthy bodies back? Or, you know, was last night
the beginning of last night's game? Anything's possible now. What did you say? They have to win 10 of the next 12, take a break, and then win another 10 of that. To me, when I watched that first period, I'm like, anything, they can do anything. They look like they can't be stopped. I do think it's super impressive the way that Horvat missed 6 weeks. Broken foot, apparently came back and he tested like phenomenally. Like they couldn't believe where his conditioning was. That is a testament, I think, to him, to the way that he trained during this time off. Cause he skated once with the group. Then he was back playing. I think so. He skated once on the Friday. And did
Saturday
they have
morning.
Another?
Yeah, Saturday morning. Okay. Saturday morning.
Saturday morning again with the team. And then he played Sunday. Didn't look great. Last night, man, he had speed. Like that first, goal they got. He was forechecking hard with Erickson, got right in there. He made a freaking, like, one of his best passes, best playmaking plays of the season when he was in the slot and he set up Erickson for the tap-in. Like, that looked to me like the Horvat that we saw, you know, December 5th, like, before he was hurt. So that's really encouraging. Like if he can spark that line, I'd personally like to see Besser playing with Horvat. I think it's a great combo for whatever reason. I think Green even brought up last night, like Besser doesn't have to play with Horvat. Like, was anyone even asking him that? Like, I don't know why he had to make a stand that Besser didn't have to play with Horvat. Okay. He doesn't have to, but isn't that the most dynamic potential in the lineup? Like Besser, gets to, you know, Horvat plays a lot. Besser will get to play a lot. And Horvat sees, I think this year he's been a bit of an underrated playmaker. Like that was one of the big knocks on him last year. He had tunnel vision, couldn't set up other guys, didn't make his wingers better. I think he's done a really good job of that so far this season and not many plays better than the one he set up for Erickson.
And it was funny because I watched those two goals last night and, you know, it is, let's be honest, it's a shock to the system when Louis Erickson scores, when he scores twice in the same game. But after the Minnesota game at the end of the road trip where Erickson had scored in that one as well, you know, the first Canuck goal that night, and you asked Travis Green, and I thought, like, it was a good question then, and it jumped right to mind last night. Like, Louis Erickson didn't do anything special on either one of his goals. Like, there's a loose puck right. on the first one. He just swats it in. The second one, he takes the feed from Horvat, and he scores. Like, a guy who, you know, plays at this level with some regularity should be able to do. Like, there was nothing special. There was nothing special in his goal in Minnesota. Why the hell can't he do it,
yeah.
like, once a week? Like, it's not asking – you're not asking the world of a $6 million guy, but, like why can't he score a little more?
No, and that's like, it's the crazy dynamic about him because he's so streaky. When he goes on these runs, I'm like, well, why isn't this happening all the time? Like, he's getting a great rebound and he's in position, and he's scoring goals. He can make it look pretty easy. Certainly that Horvat goal that those two had looked easy. But when he's not producing, you're like, holy shit. Like, was this guy ever going to score again? Like, he just goes vacant. And I know that, you know, okay, he's a great defensive player and he's not getting scored on. Yeah, but man, I haven't looked at the scoring chance data, but I would be shocked if, like, in those stretches where he's not doing anything, if he was creating scoring chances. Like, I couldn't believe Erf tweeted out that thing that Shorty had last night where it was his first home goal in a calendar year since last January. This guy hadn't scored a goal in Rogers Arena. I thought it was incredible and really telling how vacant he can be in some situations and some runs.
No, it is. And it's the same thing with the fact that, you know, the one power play goal in a calendar year as well for a guy that is out there on almost every power play and was signed out of Boston because he had scored 10 power play goals that year and, you know, this nose for the net and go to the hard area, all that kind of thing. We just don't see it. And so, no, I saw that one as well. I was like, really? Like, I know there are, like, Vertanen, all of Vertanen's points this year have come on the road. So there are a handful of other guys too. But when I saw that, I was like, seriously? But then I thought about it and I was like, yeah, like, I can't remember Louis Erickson scoring in this building, and that's why, because he hadn't done it in more than a year. When I asked you, you know, can they get back to what they had at the start of the season, obviously the stakes are different because the playoffs are no longer in reach now. And so, you know, I do think Travis Green's got a tough job on his hands, you know, to find the motivation to get his guys to, you know, buy in and you know, dig down the way. Like, they were fun to watch. And, you know, those first 15 games, there were, you know, Besser was just starting to kind of spread his wings a little bit. But, you know, Vertanen out on that early road trip had a big night, and the game in Detroit was good. Nielsen was pitching shutouts. You couldn't, you know, he was looking 8 feet tall in the net. Derek Dorsett was doing his thing. You know, they had traded for Pouliot. Like, there were lots of great storylines, and there were different storylines, it seemed, on every night. And so, you know, I am kind of curious to see what Travis Green can do to help these guys find their motivation, because, you know, yet again, the Vancouver Canucks really are playing out the string with 35 games to go.
Well, I think one of the, like, I think it was, I think there was a quote from Gilman that I saw, one of his 1040 stints, where he said, like, Green's coaching not to be embarrassed. It was something along those lines, to paraphrase. I think that should be motivation enough for this group, because this is the group, a lot of them, the core, that went 10, 25, and 6 in the second half of last year. And it was humiliating. It was like there were games, weeks went by where they had no chance at all. I can't remember. Maybe you know how they, like, it was like 1-7 and something at the end. Like, it was just crazy at the end where they just fell off a cliff. And I think for Horvat, for Sutter, for the Sedins, for some of the defensemen, for some of the guys that experienced that from Markstrom, always announcing how much he hates to lose. For these group of guys, that should be more than enough motivation. And for Horvat in particular, like, I think that he's got, you know, I think he's frustrated in the sense that he was having a very productive start to the season, and he's missed 8 weeks of this year, and he's out to prove his worth. He's out to show everyone that he's a $5.5 million player. I think he was doing it at the beginning of the year, and I think he'll continue to. Like, I don't worry about Bo Horvat at all. Like, there's lots of reasons that I think that he should be captain, but he eats and breathes hockey. Like, he just freaking loves the sport. Like, when he was off, all he did was watch hockey games. Like, he just devoured hockey, and not just the Canucks, all kinds of games. Other guys would have been, you know, streaming entire seasons of multiple Netflix shows. He just sat down, lots. He had lots of time with his dad too, and they watched hockey. And I think that he's going to be a really motivated dude. And I think Besser, it's in his nature to be like, he's hungry for those goals. And I think that those guys have something to play for. And I think the older guys are just going to be out there. Like, they don't want to be embarrassed again. And, you know, I've talked about how difficult it was on that losing streak. Like, these are ultra competitive guys that don't want to win 4 games out of 17. It's just, you don't want to live like that.
One of the guys that we don't talk an awful lot about, and I mean, he was out of the lineup for a month, but back now, Sven Berchi. I thought it was important that he scored last night because he has been pretty quiet since getting back into the lineup. And you looked at the way that Travis Green deployed his lines last night. He had Besser with the Twins, and then he had Eriksson, Horvat, and Vanek. Essentially, Sven Berchi, who, you know, I think most people see as a top six forward on this team, didn't find himself in the top six. And
right, and there's some discussion that they want to turn him into some kind of like matchup guy on the lineup. Have you heard that?
I have not heard that.
Yeah, like that maybe he could fit into, you know, Green's always looking for that line he can hang his hat. I mean, Berchi's a pretty good defensive forward.
He's going to be the next Marcus Granlund? Is that what you're saying? He's the next Marcus? Really?
I hope not, because he's got way too much offensive talent. And that, and obviously he's always going to be on the power play, but I have heard rumblings. Have you not? You've not caught wind of that one?
I have not picked up on that one. We'll keep our ear to the ground. We'll see. I mean, but the way they were deployed last night, I guess I can sort of understand.
Right here, he's on a line right now with Sutter, Granlund, and Berchi. I think that he wants that to be the line he's going to hang his hat on.
It's a contract year for Sven Berchi. That's probably not an ideal situation for him. And again, you're right. He'll get power play time. He scored on the power play last night and has 7 power. Like, he's among the Besser leads the team with 8, but Berchi's 1 back, 7. I was looking last night. Like, those two guys are among the league leaders in power play goals. This power play, like, it really. And again, when we think that the Canucks are still among the lowest scoring teams in the NHL, and this power play is insane.
No, and like it's taken on this different. Like, now this Edler to Besser thing. It's over officially. Like, he does pass to him. Like, there has been.
He got assists on both of his goals last night.
I didn't even take note of that. Like, there's been a definitive. I'm telling you, man. Like, I know it's coincidence. It's got to be coincidence. It's got to be. But from the time, I am telling you right now, from the time that you first brought it up to Green, from that game, like, we talked to him right before the game. You could see a difference in that. Like, that was the game where Bulis came out and said, like, he doesn't need to pass to him. Why is he passing to him? From that moment on, he has passed to Besser. And it's like, I don't know how effective. I haven't done the numbers on how effective they've been since. I know that they're fun to watch now because teams do sit on Besser. And he talked about it last night. Like, he does see players sitting on him. But it creates other space around the ice. And all of a sudden, the puck is moving around, all around this half ice. And it's like last night, it was really fun to watch these guys on the power play. And it has been years since it's been fun to watch a Sedin-led power play unit.
The crazy thing is, that was the best penalty killing in the National Hockey League. The LA Kings came into last night's game as the best penalty killing unit in the NHL. And fully healthy, and yet the Canucks were toying with them. I agree. Like, there were some stretches last night in the power play, you know, 6, 8, 10 quick passes in a row. They had the Kings spinning around. And, you know, it's funny, Besser hadn't been scoring an awful lot, but since, and it happened on the day of the Caesar salad, it was in Montreal that question came up about Edler to Besser.
You do agree that changed everything, though, right? Like, there was a definitive change that game. That has carried on since.
Yeah, and look what's happened. Alex Edler's had one of his best two-week stretches in a while, and even though Besser hasn't been scoring, Edler's racking up points. Like, he had 2 more assists last night. He's been a point-a-game guy here in 2018. Like, since the calendar changed, Alex Edler's a point-a-game guy. Like, when is the last time Alex Edler's been anywhere close to a point-a-game guy over a 10-game stretch? Like, it hasn't happened in years.
No, I don't. I mean, maybe it's happened. I don't remember a run like this. I said it earlier, like, he's playing, like, really, really well. And, like, I don't know what happened. Like, maybe it is all coincidence. Maybe Green did have a meeting with Edler. But, man, there has been a change. The power play looks great. And Besser's passing is a big part of that. Like, he's not just a shooter. Like, he can get, he can sauce the puck cross ice. And he's been able to deflect it off the boards when he knows Hank has space. And it's created, cause guys do collapse on him, but it's created space for the other guys to do stuff. And it looks totally different than it did earlier in the year.
And I do think an underrated and understated factor in Edler's performance is Troy Stetcher. And we've asked Travis Green all season. Like, you know, these guys had success last year. There's a couple of formations that the Canucks had a little bit of success with last year that Travis Green has admitted he's aware of, but, you know, for whatever reason, hasn't wanted to go down that road. Edler Stetcher is one of them. But again, it sort of all tracks back to around that same point in time. And they have so easily been the Canucks' best defensive pairing here over this last 10-game run.
Yeah, and I thought, like, I don't know if we ended up talking about this on the podcast, but, like, both of us at different times talked to Stetcher, and he was, like, super honest and pretty revealing in how difficult it was coming into this season, not being on the power play, you know, struggling with that mentally, having his role kind of marginalized, and there were some hurdles he had to overcome, some meetings he had to have with Green to figure out, and the coaching staff to figure out what it all meant and what the franchise thought about him. And I did, like, there was, you know, why isn't Granlund playing with the Sedins has been one of the topics that he's been asked about, and why aren't you playing Stetcher with Edler? Like, it was a really good combination last year that allowed Stetcher to be arguably the Canucks' best defenseman. He was voted that by fans, and I thought it was a fine vote. Like, he deserved it. He was among, for sure, their best defenseman. And, you know, with Edler, when they've been reunited, Stetcher's look great. Like, there's been some misses here and there, and they were criticizing him on hockey night the other night when, you know, Virtanen had that giveaway and he wasn't charging back to help Virtanen. But look, I don't think you ever have to worry about Troy Stetcher. Like, he's one of those guys that brings it. Like, okay, I heard Green talking about Delzato yesterday. I think Stetcher is the guy that Green thinks Delzato is. Like, he thinks Delzato's so competitive and fiery and doing all this stuff. Yeah, because Delzato's always chasing the play. Like, he's not winning board battles. Stetcher is. And he's super competitive. And he, like, you never have to doubt whether he's all in or not all in. Like, he's all in on every shift, and he's thinking the game as well as anyone thinks the game. And that's why at 5'9", he's being able to do what he's doing in the NHL so far.
Now, do we know, because you and I both thought this was very curious yesterday, I asked the coach, I said, like, to this point in time, all of your scratches have been scratchable guys, young guys, still developing, still trying to find their way in the NHL, but there are a lot of veterans that, prior to last night, didn't have much of a bottom line. I said, you know, if it gets to that, will you be willing to scratch veterans? And he said, yes, absolutely. And then he went on this long story about how before the season, the first day that these guys gathered as a group, and then he drops the fact that this meeting took place at the Weston Bay Shore. Like, I don't know if he's got a hotel deal or he's like a pitch guy on the side, or if this is, you know, where these mythical, magical meetings that he talked, like, but it was just so bizarre to hear him drop a hotel name in the middle of a question about would you be willing to scratch veterans.
Yeah, like, that came out of nowhere. For the first time all year, we find out that there was a massive meeting, team meeting at the West. Like, I don't, why aren't they at Rogers Arena? Why are you at the Weston Bay Shore? It was so random. At some point, I'm going to try to get to the bottom of that. But once again, a meeting came into play yesterday because I was interviewing Besser. And when I was finished, I came over to you guys and I'm like, dudes, there was another meeting. Sure enough, before Besser had gone 6 games without a goal, Green checked in with them yesterday morning. They went over what Besser needed to do to start scoring again. And all of a sudden, like the finger of God had come down from the heavens and touched Besser's stick, he comes out and scores 2 goals. I wanted to keep it for myself, but I thought, you know what? Like, I specifically asked a question to Green where I knew that it would, like, tweak him to get him to admit that they had a meeting. And I kind of regretted it because I should have saved it. Should have saved my meeting scoop for the Provies. But once again, it was a meeting that he had. Like, this dude, like, he is very big on the meetings. There are a lot of them. And when they happen, he wants you to know that there was a meeting.
Right. And apparently some happened at his favorite hotel. Some happened out at Center Ice. So we saw the famous one with Granlund that morning where he, you know, for hours it was about 5 minutes, but it felt like an hour, pulls him aside. And then Granlund goes out and scores a couple of goals that night. He's mentioned that he's had sit downs with good Branson, you know, the night in Columbus when he scored the goal. Right. You know, they talked about that very play.
That was the craziest. That was like the one I really can't take, where he said, yeah, like Branson finally scores a goal, like out of nowhere. And he says, yeah, we not only did I meet with Gudbranson today, we talked specifically about a high-low play. And it's the one he scored on. Like, come on, man. You got to be. Like, sometimes he is trolling us, though, right?
I think so. Although I will say, in Winnipeg this past week, I put the question, because Horvat was coming back, and so I said something, and this was just before game time. You know, and asked him, I said, like, to get Horvat back on the roster, I see you guys have put Gudbranson on IR. And he just kind of gave me this look and then started shaking his head. And he said, Gudbranson's not on IR. And I said, well, he's, you know, on the game notes, like, it's there in print. Like, he's on the IR. And he said, no, Gudbranson's not on IR. And I said, well, okay, so how are you getting Horvat on the line, on the roster? To which he said, Chaput. Because he calls him Chaput. He said, we put Chaput on waivers. And then he finished the scrum, and he takes a couple steps away, and then he spins back, and he says, like, you got bad info. And I think he thought, like, I was pulling it out of my ass, like, that I was just making it up, that because Gudbranson hadn't played the night before, that I was putting him on IR. But so then I had to, like, go through the game notes. I had to, like, you know, Exhibit A, Your Honor. Like, I had to pull out the game notes, and I had to, like, make it. You know, I didn't have PowerPoint there to make a full-on presentation, but, like, I had to bring visual evidence that, like, I wasn't making it up. But, like, so I'm not sure. I think we're on the outs right now. Like, he was sort of calling me out because he thought I was, like, fabricating information.
Has he changed the way he answers your questions?
I don't know.
That's how you tell if you're on the outs with him. Because if he gives you, I'm telling you right now, with him, if he's liking you, he'll give you a really long, exaggerated, out of nowhere, like he, for whatever reason lately, like he's been enjoying me. So I get these like super long answers where it always seems to come back to, you know, I want my guys to be winners. And like he always manages to hook it back into how he wants his guys to play to win. And I'm getting like almost too long. Like, I think I want him mad at me again. So I can shorten up these answers because they go on and on. And, but that's how usually you can tell.
Well, I missed you out on the road because there, you know, he wasn't laughing at the questions. He kind of was giving me the serious look. And, you know, he was asking where IMAC was, like, both in Edmonton. Like, and, you know, I don't make IMAC's travel plan. So I didn't know if he was coming out on the road. But he asked me on Saturday in Edmonton, where's IMAC? I don't know. And then Sunday, he said, like, where's IMAC? Well, if he wasn't in Edmonton, he's not just going to magically show up in Winnipeg. But, like, all of a sudden, he's taking roll call now of, like, who's traveling and who's not. And
yeah, well, he knows a lot about what we're up to. Like, he seems to know everything. He knows a lot. He knows what we're saying. He knows what our takes are. And he knows what our travel plans are. He knows when we don't have luggage. Like, he's either very well briefed or he follows us very closely. And I saw that he had that, interview with Batch, the so-called, like, 650 loves their exclusives. And this was the exclusive Batch and Green interview. And in it, at the end of it, 4 minutes in, out of nowhere, I thought it was a rather surprising question, you know, because it just didn't seem, it didn't seem to be a lot of, I was been talking about Delzato. It didn't seem like a lot of people were. And Bachelor asks him about Delzato, and he goes through this long interview. Apparently, I heard that he had, like, sheets in front of him. Like, he was ready to go through it all, and he knew how many hits Delzato had. He was top three in blocks and all this stuff. And he made this full-throated defense of Delzato and why the minus 19 is really a minus 13. And man, like, that. And, like, right away, like, we were talking about how it reminded us of Willie last year, who we were all complaining about a game in Boston, one goal game. Horvat got one shift in the final 3 minutes. I think it was a 6-on-5. He didn't put him out there. There was a timeout in all of this that he still didn't play. And all of this criticism ended up with Willie pulling Abs aside and them telling Abs, like, Willie wants to talk about this Horvat thing. And he had the shift charts and he was explaining, like, what was he explaining? Like, there was too many. He had played too much and he couldn't play the final 3 minutes or something?
Yeah, like he broke it down shift by shift and why he couldn't put him right back out there, even though he was the team's leading scorer, their biggest threat to provide the offense that they needed in a one-goal game. But, you know, well, Willie had his explanations for why Bo Horvat couldn't play, couldn't be out there. I can't remember who went in his place, but it was probably Dorsett and Spezza, because there was a game earlier in the season, I think in Ottawa, early in the season, when they pulled the goaltender and Spezza somehow was among the six players the Canucks had on the ice looking for the equalizer. All right, as we wind down this podcast, and we'll get another one in before the big game on Sunday, February the 4th, but... this is our first chance to do this. We talked about you watching from economy class and watching your Eagles beat the Falcons. Yeah. And then they follow it up and they beat the Minnesota Vikings. And now they have punched their ticket to Super Bowl 52. I can see, like, you just got this bounce in your step these days. You have the Eagles jacket you're wearing. And you're part of the Nick Foles fan club. Like, how excited are you?
I'm a really big fan, like I'm a fanboy of that team and have been since I was like a little tiny kid and watching like Ron Jaworski be the quarterback and they'd bring Randall Cunningham for third. So I live and die with this team and it was like, I'm just blown, like good, like think games like that, that NFC Championship game, they don't happen to the Eagles. They don't have games like that. They don't have these, like, it was like a Freaky Friday game where somehow Nick Foles' soul was pulled out and someone implanted John Elway in his prime, right, like right into him. Like I've never seen an Eagles quarterback play a game like it was a perfect game. And it honestly, there were drops where it could have been better. Like there were like three or four drops. One was on a bomb to Torrey Smith. He could have thrown for 400 yards against one of the best defenses of all time. And right, I'm probably setting myself up for a huge disappointment because it is Brady. It is the Patriots. I know all of that. Yet I think I believe they're going to win. Like I just, it's in, like I, and I'm sure it's going to be a, like part of me sees it's going to be a Charlie Brown moment. The football's going to be there. I'm thinking they're going to win. The football's going to be pulled away. I'm going to be heartbroken, left on my ass. But right now, I'm on top of the world. Things are going my way finally. And I do think that they're going to win. And I guess I'll be in Florida maybe with you when I'm watching the game.
Well, I'm traveling that day, but I see you've altered your travel plans to ensure that you are like on firm ground, plenty of time, all the pregame show, maybe a little tailgating, who knows. But I'm traveling on that day, but hopefully get into Fort Lauderdale in time for kickoff. So it'll be quite something because we watched. I feel like there's this bond now, our traveling bond. You know, we watched the first round game in Atlanta and now a chance Super Bowl 52. But, you know, you talk about it. Like, yeah, they'll go in as the underdog, no question. But, like, you think you're feeling good now? Like, imagine if they beat Brady and Belichick and the Patriots, call it a day at that point. Like, you're done. Yeah. No, what could possibly top that?
No, it would be, I may take a week off just to recover emotionally from the, like, I don't even know what it's going to be like, but it's been a long time. I've been hoping that they could do it. I think that this, like, I like the Viking, like, I thought the Falcons were the worst matchup for them. I like the matchup against the Vikings. Their offensive line manhandled the Vikings defensive line. The Patriots, it's defensive line, it doesn't come close to the Vikings. Like, how is the Eagles offensive line not going to mash the shit out of these guys? I can't picture it right now. So right now I'm thinking they're going to win. I'm imagining them holding up the trophy. I'm imagining. So I hope it happens. I will be insufferable for about a week or 10 days after that if it does happen.
Well, 10 more days to build
up. Inconsolable if they lose. Like, you're going to have to wrap your arms around me and say it's going to be okay. I will be in. I may need a try. That may be the moment where I'll need the Travis Green meeting to recover emotionally from that.
At least we'll be in Florida. I can't imagine that weather will be an issue for travel delays and those types of things. So that won't, you know, that shouldn't bring you down any further should the Eagles not rise to the occasion. Podcast, we'll get it done again. It's the All-Star weekend, so we'll reconvene next week. There won't be a whole lot of game action, but again, as we work toward the trade deadline,
There are storylines everywhere with this hockey club, and we'll see how Brock Besser fares as he puts the flow on display for the entire league to see down in Tampa this weekend. PatCast is always brought to you by Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam, proud sponsors of community hockey. Eagle Ridge GM, your one-stop car and truck center where everyone is a part of their hockey family. For Botch, this is Jeff Patterson. Thanks so much for listening to another PatCast here on Province Radio.